Besley. I'm the library director. And we're very lucky in the library to have a resident poet who also works at the circulation desk at hours that nobody else is willing to work. And he was recently invited to present and give a poetry reading at poetry at the Round Top Festival in Round Top, Texas. It was quite a distinguished gathering, and he really enjoyed himself there and has come back inspired to kick off the new year with a knowledge poetry reading, which has we'll find out what that's about as we go on. So I'm going to have Rustin be the master of ceremonies here, and thank you very much, Rustin.
Thank you for joining us for our first poetry reading of the year. And we are calling it an evening of knowledge poetry. And to just give a little shaping of the mood, I guess, I'm going to read a poem by Tony Ellis. It's from his forthcoming book called, The Morning Tree. And it's called The Morning of Creation. Silently, out of the night, comes memory. Infinity has a story to tell about itself. Speech wakes up and stirs as the formless takes shape. A breath of wind blows across an empty landscape. A splinter of light gleams off a clean bird's wing. A whispering is heard. Recognition dawns. A new day has begun. So I'm going to introduce the readers for tonight, and what we'll do is we'll have I don't understand the hand signals.
Bill is going to start, then Ken and me.
Okay.
I was going to suggest we take this away.
What I'm going to do is read your bios, and then you can proceed, and I believe you're going to do two rounds of 10 minutes each. Actually, we have a fourth reader, and we're going to have Suzanne read some poems, too. So I'll give a brief bio of Suzanne as well. So first we have Isabel Levy. She has been working at Maharishi University in Fairfield, Iowa since 1979 in a variety of administrative capacities. She is a longtime practitioner and teacher of the Transcendental Meditation Technique. She has a first book of poetry. Her poems explore the wonders of the transcendent during the Transcendental Meditation Technique, during the TM City program, and during activity. They describe experiences of silence, light, and bliss. The relationship of individuality expanding to universality, the intense yearning for the divine, finding infinite love deep within and singing its glory. Ken Chalkin is a media relations director for Maharishi University of Management and the David Lynch Foundation. He is also a published writer and an award-winning poet. Bill Grazer, a Long Island native, has worked as dairy farmer, carpenter, teacher of the Transcendental Meditation Program, and is currently the locksmith at Maharishi University of Management. He's been published in North American Review, Michigan Review, Lyrical Iowa, Chiron Review, and Long Island Quarterly. And I just found out today, Bill is the recipient of the Norman Thomas Memorial Award from the Iowa Poetry Association. Congratulations. And we also have reading tonight Suzanne Vesely. She is our head librarian, a poet, and she's also a William Blake scholar. And we'll hear from all four of these fine poets tonight. Starting with Bill.
Hello, everyone. Can you hear me okay? If I start to fade away, just go like that. So I'll start with a poem that's my newest poem, so it's on the top of the stack in my head. It's called The Upbeat Nature of Light Bulbs. They're there, lighting the room, and one of them goes dark. It's that way. The filament, delicate as a hummingbird's wing. And if broken, it's over. Nothing to do but change it for a new one, throwing the old one away. But bulbs don't worry about the dark. For them, it's enough to shine, to illumine that around them, to help us see. Next poem called Stones. There are poems not made from words, but from stones, who speak as stones speak, of the warmth of the sun, the glistening of the rain, of staying put in the wind, though the wind says, "Come with me." And as the poem of the wind rushes through us, and that of the rain runs down our face, the poem of stones sits superbly still, as we should too, sometime. Next poem is called Sisters. I'm on Long Island, waiting for a bus, where most people have cars, but those who don't wait for a bus. And two sisters are playing, the one maybe four, the other almost three, when they look up, as I do too, to see a feather floating. And where it lands, they run to pick it up. But the older, reaching out her hand, stops, allowing the younger, who just arrived, being slower of legs, to be the first to touch it, to hold it high, who then offers it to her sister, who holds it high, who then offers it to me. Now, I wish I had saved the feather so I could show you all, but I handed it back. Next poem called Socks. Underwear for the feet. That which comes between us and our shoes. Hiding place for holes and smell bad. Dress socks, work socks, white and red socks. Wool socks that keep the toes cozy warm. And while there are many with a drawer full of socks, there are those, too, without socks, without shoes, who have but a dream of socks, socks they wear in a dream of cowboy boots, And as they dream, their cracked and callous feet float about the room, as do peasants when dressed in the purple robes of the king. Isabel's poems especially will bring us into the dome and into the field of consciousness. This poem will bring us out into riding a bike across Iowa in the hot weather. The poem is called Rag Bri, and if you know, that means, well, it was created by the Des Moines Register, so the R is for register. The Register's annual grand bicycle ride across Iowa. And I had my first taste of it some weeks ago when it took place, just driving a vehicle for a team of riders. And I was very impressed with the whole thing. It was very good fun, very huge thing, thousands of people. And the people were very kind and hospitable to one another, the riders and the towns where people were welcomed and allowed to tent, set their tents up most everywhere. They opened their homes to a large number of people sleeping on air mattresses. And I got a poem out of it, which makes it quite worthwhile for me. Rag Bri. 10,000 and more they ride. The young, the old, the lean, the bulging bellied. From the river on the west, through cornfields and small towns that cheer them and feed them, raise their glasses with them, and open their houses to their air mattresses, their yards to their tents. Come morning, with the one wheel of the sun lighting their way, the 10,000 spokes of Rag Bri ride on. Though some, their tires or their breath deflated, will wait on roadside for the sag wagon, but all make it in spirit, who have found the way of the pedals and the padded pants, who wear the crown of the helmet, who drink from the goblet of the water bottle, and in the end, dip their rims in the Mississippi and raise their bicycles above their heads, and all this to be joyous and to know that they can. The sag wagon is a vehicle that comes and picks up those who can't go any further. So I did win this recognition, and the poem was for a poem called Magic Light. So here's that poem. And I'm into photography. Those are my photos out there in the foyer, and a few other things I put together. So this is a photography poem called Magic Light. And you know Magic Light is around sunrise or sunset when it's a nice light. So. Yes, come right up. Sure, sure. And this is open too, if you like. Magic Light. Ansel Adams sits up, reaches for his camera, his arm bony as a tripod leg. For it is magic light, the golden light of sunrise and sunset. But then he lays back down and focuses instead through the lens of his soul, there in the black box of his skull. And there he sees all the light that ever filled Yosemite or blazed the crosses at Hernandez. And with his brittle jaw, with its few teeth remaining, there in the dark room of a coffin, he smiles. I think that was my 10 minutes. Mr. Kenshaw.
Hi. Good to see the faithful always here. You know, I was going to start off with my old poems, long ones, but maybe I should just get right into the stuff I like to write, which are haiku and tanka. Here's one that started off as a haiku and then became a tanka years later. It's called Preparing to Write. Still louder? Yeah? Okay. Railroad crossings are places to become aware. Stop, look, and listen. If you hear a train of thought, you'll know you're on the right track. The first haiku I ever wrote was about relationships of different kinds, but it's about transformation. It goes like this. Caterpillars spin, increments of commitment. Butterflies fly free. This is the art of the haiku. I'm hoping I can remember all these. Do away with words, and you'll have a way with words. Speak less, and say more. And what is a haiku? Well, here's a haiku about haiku. Three lines, two spaces, 17 feet to walk through. Then, the unending. There's a place called Cliff House, and it's on Galliano Island in the Gulf Islands in, off the coast of Vancouver. And it's very, even though it's the ocean, it's very tranquil there because there's, you know, Salt Spring, Galliano, many different islands, and Vancouver Island blocks the main waves of the ocean from coming in, so it's almost as calm as a pond sometimes. So I was sitting out there on dusk, and you could hear a pin drop. And I heard something drop very, very softly. And out of that came this haiku. Tiny bells call me. Arbutus blossoms falling, sounding the silence. And they actually are the little flowers of the arbutus, and they look like tiny white bells. It's amazing. Is somebody keeping track of time? I didn't notice when I started.
We need 5 more minutes.
Okay, all right. So, talking about tanka. Tanka is sort of like you add two extra lines called a hoku. And they've had these competitions of renga where one poet would say a haiku and then the next would say the hoku, which sort of has the essence of the first and then twists it a bit. And they would go around like that. And so I like that form. My son was living as an uchideshi at San Leandro in an Aikido dojo, and I got to visit him, and his teacher let me stay there, and I got to see her training with the students, and it was quite mesmerizing. And 2 weeks later, when I got home, I wrote this tanka. It's called My Son's Sensei. I'm having a senior moment right now. Rooted to the ground, she repels her attackers, flowing, not moving. In storms, trees bear great burdens, bending, not breaking. And I really love trees, and there's a willow tree right outside my front door, and next to it is a locust tree. And I was thinking willow trees get a real bum rap, and so I wrote this poem for this tree. And you'll see what I mean. willow tree, an overflowing fountain of green. Willow trees whisper. People say, weeping willow. But I'm not crying. Just bowing down to the earth. Kissing the ground with my leaves. And one day I saw the branch of the willow wrapped around the branch of the locust tree, and I thought that was very sweet, and I wrote this one called Friendship. Trees like to hold hands, bending branches to link leaves, they forge deep friendships. Swaying with the wind, they dance. Under the moonlight, romance. And here's a pair of poems that sort of define for me a special relationship. It's a tanka, and then the next one is a double haiku. Undecided. How can you tell me you want to meet me halfway? You've yet to begin. Love is non-negotiable. You're either out or you're in. Committed. When the tide rolls in, bows of boats bump each other, tethered to the dock. With our ups and downs, we remain tied together, solid as a rock. And then this last one is a seven haiku poem, and it sort of started in the dome, and every time I thought I had one haiku done, the next one would come out, and eventually it's called Coalescing Poetry into Haiku Form, seven of them, Creating a Universe. And it's all on the reflection of Maharishi's talks of how consciousness refers to itself and how the Veda gets structured and expressed from Adhika and all that. So, poetry began the process of creation deep within itself. The first sound came from a vowel in the bowel of the universe. But it soon collapsed, choking on a consonant with nowhere to go. Looking to itself, it remembered what it was and started dancing. Tapping syllables, the sound fractured into forms, causing attraction. Elements combined into a cosmic language, sounding out all things. Same thing with these words, as they break and make themselves into poetry.
I'm not as I'm more senior than either Bill or Ken, so I don't rely on memory. I wrote it down.
I know
it.
She has the data.
I'm the data manager in the human resource office. So I'm going to start with this one. This was the first poem that got me in this track, and so I'm very attached to it. It's called In Thy Presence. In thy presence, I free fall. In thy presence, I free fall and land softly in the folds of thy grace. In thy presence, the drop of thy glory rushes to merge in the ocean of thy glory. In thy presence, my individuality disappears. Nothing exists, nothing matters. I'm free like the wind, free to enjoy the freedom of being. In thy presence, there's just thou and I. I merge in thy bliss, thou alone remain resplendent in thy glory. Lord of silence, beyond thought, beyond speech, beyond the intellect, beyond the mind. Thou alone art, one without a second. Self-effulgent, ineffable, self-contained. From thy silence, fullness emerges, our fullness. We are thy silence made manifest. Lord of creation, thou art the source of life, the source of light, of wisdom, and of peace. Lord of being, we adore thee, we worship thee, we bow down to thee again and again. Deep within.
Louder, please.
Deep within. Maybe you can give me the microphone because I tend to fade. You can talk to the mic. What?
This is covering up.
Deep within. Deep within, I step into a temple of silence. Inner silence. From the structureless structure, silence flows in all directions. From the depth of the self-contained silence emerge all streams of silence. Silence at the junction point of night and the first light of dawn. Silence of a winter morning. Silence of a summer night, when the final song of the last bird stops abruptly and throws me into a silence so deep I could almost drown in it. Silence of a holy place where inner and outer noise subside in the glory of the divine, the all-encompassing silence of being. Deep within, there's a column of light extending from the depth of being into infinity, omnidirectional, pure, free, infinitely big and infinitely small. Since being is everywhere, there is no distance between here and here, and this light is everywhere, dispelling all shadows, all negativity, all boundaries. From this light flow all lights, the light of the rising sun, the light of love, the light of enlightenment, the glow of being, being becoming. Deep within, there is a bottomless ocean of bliss which endlessly flows within itself. Whole, self-contained, pure, free. From this ocean emerge all streams of love and devotion, of ecstasy, wholeness, unity, touching everything and everyone, but the ocean endlessly flows within itself, remaining forever untouched. Deep within, God is here, waiting for us. Your thousand faces. I beheld your thousand faces in a drop of water, in the last withered leaf falling gently on earth, in the first blade of grass in the spring, in the silence of a winter morning, in the billion snowflakes whirling wildly in a blizzard, in the silence of a summer night. I beheld your oneness in the silence of being. In a grain of sand, I see all the deserts, all the mountains, all the seashores and Mother Earth. In a drop of water, I behold all the rains, all the snows, all the oceans and the seas. In a blade of grass, I embrace all the prairies, all the fields, all the gardens and the lawns. In the slow chimes of the town clock, which ushers in a new day, I slip in an ocean of timelessness and behold the dawn of a new age where your glory shines on earth as it does in heaven. In the light which reflects off the wings of a bird in flight, I see you luminous, resplendent, full of light. Memory. In every grain of creation, infinity is present. Eternity flows through our segmented perception of time. Deep within every banyan seed resides the memory of a thousand trees, tall and strong. Deep within me, deep within you, lies an immense ocean of silence, where the divine and I are one. From this oneness emerges fullness, your fullness, my fullness, forever immersed in that ocean of being, that ocean of oneness. Inner silence. When inner silence swoops down upon me, nothing is left but you, all-inclusive, primordial, full of light, the one and all, the one in all. There's only you. You came, you went, you came, you went. And then one day you came to stay. There's only you, no one but you. You are the sky, you are the plants, you are the wind, you are the sun, the moon, the stars, the universe. You're all there is, you're all that was, and all that will be, and all that will forever be, and you are me. There's only you, no one but you. One being. The birds sing high in the sky. The wind whistles in the trees. I sing to you, and you sing through me. The rivers flow to the sea. I flow to you, and you flow in me. You, I, we. One being, infinite, eternal. Oneness, glorified, sanctified. One being. Timeless time, spaceless, spaceless place. Holy time, sacred space. Junction point of silence and dynamism. Holy time, sacred space. Infinity collapsing, endpoint emerging. Holiness, sacredness. Timeless time, spaceless space. In eternity and in time, in eternity and in time, in space and infinity, I am present. In the silence of the dawn and in the roaring of the sea, I'm present. In times of feast and in times of famine, in the sun and in the clouds, in light and in darkness, I'm present. In those who have come to me in their hearts, and in those who are wrapped up in their individuality, I'm present. In those who search for me deep within, and in those who seek me far and wide, I'm present. In those who fast and pray, and in those who celebrate me in songs and dances, I'm present. In those who are sunk in a well of silence, and in those who are caught up in inner and outer noise, I'm present. When the world rises up as one to sing my glory, and when individuals cut themselves off from each other and from me, I'm present. In the sun and in the moon, in the stars and in the galaxies, in every human being, I'm present. Jai Guru.
What's that?
Did you take it?
Yeah, I did. I am just making sure that wondering if we have something here. Well, that's a tough act to follow. I won't try. I have a poem just off the top of my head. I'll do a little Bill Grazer here.
Louder, please.
Okay. This is an old poem written about 25 years ago before I went to college and, I mean, went to a PhD program and turned into the kind of poet that those places produce. It's just called Invincible. The geese are the arrow. The moon is the bow. The setting sun in the perfect evening sky is the target. The geese fly low. No cloud to hide them. The black oaks can't divide them. Strong winds cannot slow them. It is I who know them. I am the archer. It is I who know them. And now I'll try something that I just got through writing and just totally stick my neck out doing that. I'm still working on the title. Right now I'm calling it A Letter to Satyuga. And this is towards about 9,000 years into Satyuga. You have a dozen rainbows left to sell in the morning, and everything is going well. By noon, your stock all gone, you hasten to the welcome shade of sarvisberry trees. Your mother planted them when you were young. The fibers of her once immortal heart do not delay your mind this afternoon. To plan is a delight that celebrates desire and its fruition. Early or late, the house you bought at midday keeps its price, underwritten by the love of that special one. And yes, you're wealthy both in word and deed, and life's necessities are always close at hand. No regrets to cloud your evening rest. Yours the custody of intimate responses from the land and skies that always will be yours. Nor need you work for ownership through written law. Your life, its main intent, easily met. The song of being on schedule filled your soul. That one who never failed. And so you hold all things alive and all life sweet. And you won't remember me who labored in the dark to set you free. And that is well and good, as it should be. But you who still can yet recall the day and moment that your universe burst into silence, that is song, the song that silence fills. Remember your own children in that stillness. Remember to remember and provide. And let's see what I can do. This is a senior moment poem. It's for Mr. Blake, Catherine's last song. Catherine was his wife, and she always called him Mr. Blake. Poetry comes less readily. As I grow closer to the grave, I must grope and grovel for words, thirst for that milk that once flowed unbidden. Perhaps I did give up, told myself it no longer mattered, but then tried simpler words, settled for what I still knew. I knew that over time even those poetic sacred feet can fail, or like mortal feet, ache at thoughts of short excursions in our garden of lost love. Yet there remains that core whose sweet stillness worms can never find, with which eternity fills empty space, affirming all possible acts of love, affirming the yet unwritten poem, even in that greatest loss, even then. And I'd like to invite Dara to help me with the next poem. There is my friend from the literature department who's also a great artist. And if you will. What I've done, one period in my life I was creating books. This is a little book I made, and I put an original poem on the book. It's called Albina by Suzanne. Oh, do you want to sit, Dara?
No, okay.
And It's an accordion poem, and it has, it's all, I did all of the
lettering,
calligraphy, and behind it there it's on the, there's sort of these little gray or kind of brownish things that they're supposed to resemble roots. There is a red part, and underneath it it says just albina over and over again in larger white letters. So just so you know what that's all about. Okay.
Okay, remind me of where we're...
Okay, I'll take the top, I guess, and you can,
okay,
take the high road and you can take the low road.
Okay.
Okay. I am the basket whose...
pattern is never woven.
Weave me.
Weave me.
Beyond all color, I measure...
the sacred ones, all. So should we do it to punctuation instead?
Yeah. I'll just put my finger where you're...
Okay. Okay. All of the empty nights.
All of the space.
Measure me.
I am the sigh of the...
house cat. When she dreams
of murder. I, the dream that shatters all sleep.
Through my craft, I bear
the wakened back through
my ever-deepening roots.
Through their lost inner fires.
Through their all their well-formed regrets.
Back from a stillness where is rest, and you assume
what you once feared there in the transparent
peace between
the endless urge
and infinity. So, we had fun. And I'm going to read a poem that's a bit on the challenging side. Is there time where it's Rustin?
I think it's about time. Yeah.
Is there time for me to read?
There's going to be there's another cycle. So
okay, I'll save that one,
yeah.
And that'll be an oldie but goodie. It's,
again, and welcome to those who just slipped in. It's inspiring for me, you know, to share my poems. Okay, here I am. And then you hear where other poets are. And you think, well, that's pretty cool. And we learn from one another. There's a new poem called The Aspiration of Apples. Worms are welcome. Apples turn no one away. Whether taken but once, as by Eve, or taken every day to keep the doctor away. Whether eaten raw with a crunch, or cooked to the mush of applesauce, enjoyed in the porch swing of apple pie, or let fall from the tree to be eaten by ants and the wind. The aspiration of apples is to grow ripe, then bite by bite to disappear. And I don't quite know the title to this one yet. I had forgotten about it and then just remembered it. The bowl on the baker's table. Big as a happy heart. Loves when flour is sifted in. When eggs tapped on its brim crack and weep their golden tear. When vanilla, sugar, milk, measured by spoon and cup, are mixed in with whisk and good wishes. And then, when all is poured into a bake pan, the bowl is set in the sink with the spoon, the measuring cup, the bake pan too, when the baking is done, all to be washed like kids in a tub, so that somewhere, a friend, a neighbor, a stranger too, can enjoy the sweetness that comes from the happy heart. Ken was sharing poems about trees. Trees can teach us a lot. This is called Something to Know. The old tree by the old school knows something. Look at it and you'll see. A city of leaves built high above a single trunk. And the way the sun comes to it, and the rain, and roots a cellar full of monks making wine, while in any weather wearing but a simple bark robe. But more than this is the stillness, the poised grace, as if the best place it could be is right where it is. And if ever it needs move, a breeze comes. I like to write poems when I'm driving. I never just sit and work on poems. It's either when I'm driving, when I'm supposed to be sleeping, or when I'm walking. And when I'm watching movies, I often get ideas from movies. But in driving, I can either work on poems, because I say them out loud over and over, or I see something that inspires me. And this, on the way to Iowa City, there's a circle of trees where there had been a farmhouse, but the farmhouse is gone. So there's a story there. The circle of trees where the house had been leaf again. Grass, where no lawnmower will sound, sings. Spring comes, though the postman does not. Nests house the hatching of flight. And the once exclusive flowerbed welcomes all that wildly grasps at the sun. For spring has come, though the postman has not. I think my favorite word is reverence. So I always, for a while, set out to write a poem called Reverence. But often you have to forget about it, and then the first line, at some point, will come. Reverence. Like any in the dictionary, there's a definition. Many words together to explain one. But reverence is more than that. More than the white-tongued page or the ink-stripe words can say. More than the teacher, her head carrying a stack of books, can convey. But if we listen, long after the marching band has passed, and watch as the balloon-holding crowd clears away, we may notice, within the awe around us, that which by beholding we fall to our knees. Listening to Isabel's poems, we reflect on where this beautiful path that I think we're all moseying along or running along can lead. And this poem is more like where I might still be if I hadn't learned to meditate. Still, it's called Thanks. I'd built my house out of beer cans and rolling papers, rock and roll and the hope that the wind would not blow it down. But it did, so I bought more beer, walled in as one can be by what I knew. Then the smile began. Seen first on a poster, then at a lecture, then in a little room, I learned the smiling technique. Like this, there are millions who are returning to the house around which the wind stands still. And how can we thank him? This man who gives all credit to his master, who laughing, holding a flower, welcomes us home. And last poem, and thanks for listening. My favorite place to walk is on the other side of Route 1, kind of behind the Gateridge Court building. And I not just enjoy the nature, but I like finding signs, things left behind, like there's an old car down in there, where I walk. I walk where the rusted car sits at the edge of the field, grass as high as the fenders. The shout of the engine and rumble of the road are gone. But now the grass is heard, chafe bells chiming in the wind, and bird song, bugles of a feathered cavalry. Beyond the field are trees, the earth sloping down to a stream with water enough to hear what water says. Beyond this I have not been, as few have not, as few have, but a hawk, a field mouse, a tree holding the sun in its arms, and a poem, though not this poem, but one you write, in a field not far away.
Now, I think this poem is kind of a reflection of what we're all experiencing when we listen to Bill and Isabel read their poetry. Poetry, the art of the voice. How fine will your breath become from listening to these words? How soft will they seem to be As they settle through the mind, like silent snowflakes falling from a windless winter sky. I often marvel at the mystery that words can work on a listener's heart and mind. Upon hearing a poet's thoughts, a poet's breath flowing from an inner voice, a windless wind speaking through a voiceless voice. You talk about trees. I remember one day I was walking in the UBC, University of British Columbia Endowment Lands with a friend, and I was admiring this tree. It was just really beautiful, the trunk and everything. And then it was as if something came back to me from the tree. And I took the words that were in my mind, and the next day this poem came out. I never had a title for it until I eventually called it Being in Nature, a Gift from a Tree. The realness of natural things, the nearness of you, the beauty that nature brings when seeing is true, the silence that inward sings when hearing is clear, the harmony between all beings, it exists right here. And here's my first poem, basically, that sort of wrote itself and was published, and I won an award for it. And when things like that happen, you really can't take credit for it. It's just good luck. But you're thankful. And it's called Ode to the Artist, Sketching Lotus Pads at Round Prairie Park. Black lines briefly sketched on paper capture our appearance, but not our essence. Your attention interests us, although others have never before. Your watchful eyes tell us we are a part of you. Can you feel our thoughts? Can you think our feelings? We do yours, and we thank you for committing us to memory. For long after we've gone and transmuted ourselves back into nature, our likeness will remind you that we were, and your response will touch our hearts. That was sort of like Shruti, that which you hear. And then the publisher wanted another poem, and I got really nervous about that. So this one came out as Smriti, the memory of the whole experience, and pretty much a generic way of explaining how the creative process, or trying to understand it. Sometimes poetry happens. Some poets can write from reflected experience, referring back to what was written. Others need to be there in full view of their subject, opening up to what's being given. Sometimes poetry happens between the two. It's then you don't really write the poem, it writes you. You just put it down on paper. When you see it there, you've captured it. Or rather, it's captured you. What really happened between the two? To explore that space between you and me is to discover who we are. For deep within, at the source of the gap, lie the togetherness of the three. The seer, the seen, and the poetry in between. This is a little poem that my daughter brought home, a big leaf without the skin on it, and it sort of triggered this poem called As Above, So Below. As above, so below, allowing love to help things grow, repeating the pattern to copy each other. In the daughter is the mother. In each snowflake, a glistening star, this whole universe is what we are. In each leaf, we see a tree, for every branch a capillary. In each tree not seen are seeds, and in each seed is found a tree. So are we found in thee, as thou, O Lord, in each of me. And a couple years later, I was stuck in Houston, Texas. And some friend took me out of that place of tar and noise and glass and cement. And we went to a park. And I saw these ponderosa pine cones, which were humongous. I've never seen anything like that. And brought a few back to my room and was just looking at them. And then this poem came out. Pine cone trees. Marveling, beholding sequential symmetries, nature reveals to me her inner mysteries. Spiraling, unfolding to spread their seeds, the cones of the conifers look like trees. Evergreen miniatures dancing. Wait, let me start over. We'll pick up where we left off. I can't do that. Pine cone trees. Marveling, beholding sequential symmetries, nature reveals to me her inner mysteries. That one's going to have to wait. It's so simple, but I just can't remember it.
Mysterious.
Yeah. Let's go to something mysterious. Thank you. I was in Jakarta, and it's a very special place in Indonesia. And I spent the first couple of nights and days just sleeping and meditating and getting over 17 hours of jet lag. And then very, very early in the morning before the mullahs started chanting, and I heard these words come into my head, and they were very strange. I wrote, was fighting getting up, but I finally did and wrote them down. And then this thing came out. It's called Indonesia Mystery Poem. He hides within the rock of three dimensions and cannot be found in this world. When night comes, she rises like a moon to shine her light upon the mountain. The sea dances, rising and falling like a lover in her arms. What pull does she have on his life as she looks for a partner to dance with? The moon bows before the rising sun, and he is left breathless. People who lived there later told me what that was all about. It's the queen of the southern seas. There's a myth there where she meets with the king once a year up in the tower, and everyone waits for their consummation. And she always takes the souls of people swimming in green swimming trunks. That's her color. And dance. Anyway, it was kind of magical. Let's see. Let's try that again. Pine cone trees. Marveling, beholding sequential symmetries, nature reveals to me her inner mysteries. Spiraling, unfolding to spread their seeds, the cones of the conifers look like trees. Parallel helixes winding all around, evergreen miniatures painted ever brown. Dancing, rolling, whirling on the ground, the trees and the pine seeds are wanting to be found. We are found to be wanting. You are wanting to be found. Then you can leave it there.